We're going to get all the story of what happened at the G20 and what's been going on since. And I'd like to welcome to the show today, joining us in the studio, Elroy Yao. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, yeah, thanks for joining us here today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. And I guess maybe could we just start from the beginning? I know you were arrested at the G20, but I guess how did it all happen?
Well, from the beginning, I was walking down in full GTC uniform, just down Queen Street, around 101 College. Police blocked off that whole area with their bikes, and there was no riot gear. It was just police officers in uniform. When suddenly, it looked like I wasn't going to be able to get to Queens Park, so I started to walk back to college so that I could call my dispatch center and tell them what was going on. As I was walking back towards college, I was nailed hard onto the ground, so hard that my glasses and my watch broke, and a man was on top of me, wrestling me down, and I was fighting back, and he said, "Stop resisting arrest, stop resisting arrest," and I was like, "Get off me," like, you know, "Who are you? Get off me," and another one of his friends joined and held me down, and that's when they identified themselves as police officers. These were guys that were in normal clothing, no police uniform, no police ID, no police number, nothing. It was men in jeans and a work shirt. There was the other cop looked like a homeless person, a big, unkempt beard, plaid shirt. And they proceeded to hold me down harder than they needed to for, like, I'm 5'10", 155 pounds at that time. And they used a lot of force to hold me down, cuff my back, cuff me in the back, and shackled my legs, and dragged me across Queens Park in front of supervisors and transit constables that were waiting for me. They took me to the grassy area of Queens Park, put me down, took off my belt, my shoelaces, took all my watch, my glasses, anything metal, anything I could hurt myself or somebody else with, as they were berating me and my job, how they're always the first to help, and now I'm here fucking them and screwing them over and participating in these events. I should know better than to stay clear of this area. And I told her, I actually don't get a choice where I work. TTC tells me where to work. So I can avoid the area.
Mm-hmm.
So they put me in a paddy wagon next to another, put me in a paddy wagon, and I asked through the little holes to the arresting officers. Actually, the arresting officers, it was a big joke. They were laughing at it. They were laughing, saying, "Hey, we got a TTC guy. We got a TTC guy. Hey, hey, hey! Who wants to take a picture with him? Who wants to take a picture with him?" And it was a joke, and I couldn't believe it. And I got in the paddy wagon, and I asked a police officer. I can't remember which one. I couldn't see which one. Mm-hmm. There's a guy, and I told him, "There's a guy in a white shirt. He should be where he's a transit supervisor, or there should be two transit constables. Can you grab them and tell them? Because I got to tell them I can't go to work."
Right.
Within 5 minutes, they came. He asked me for my badge number, who I am, where I'm supposed to be, and pretty much told the cop, "This guy is an employee of ours. We have a two-way radio. You can talk directly to our control center, and they can clarify everything." I never heard an answer back, and I figured that, you know, probably 20 minutes or so, I was in the paddy wagon, 15, 20 minutes. They opened the doors and let me out, and I thought everything was fine, and I was clear. They put me in a bus with a few others. One of them was a reporter, as well as other people that were bleeding and everything else and bruised up. And the bus started to move about 20 minutes later, and I realized I was not going home for the night, and I was not going to work.
This was a TTC bus, or this was a...
This was a Toronto police bus. It had Toronto cells police in it and benches. Whoa. In it.
Whoa. And were these officers that you're mentioning that arrested you that were in plain clothes, were you able to ever find out what if they were Toronto police, or do you know what...
I have images of them through YouTube. One of them that berated me the worst was Scary Lady. She's quite popular on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I've got pictures, not pictures, but YouTube footage of the other two cops, and it'll be up to the Toronto police to identify. They should have been Toronto officers, though.
Right. And okay, so this is arrested on your way to work, and then what, okay, I guess just going on from the story, what happens after, or where do they take you after you're in this bus?
During the whole event, like after as soon as I got put down on the ground and they arrested me and was taking me to Queen's Park to secure me for I guess Eastern Avenue, I told them my story and that I'm working and everything else. Their answer was a very sarcastic, "Sure, sure, sure, sure. All those guys in black shirts and black hoods, they're all going to work too. They're all honest people. Don't worry." Very sarcastic. This is our police force for the day.
Whoa. And okay, so what was it like then when they took you to?
We went into Eastern Avenue, and there were cells, and from inside the bus, you can already hear people yelling and screaming. There may have been 10, 15 cells in this one area, and I figured, well, that's a pretty big facility, because the bus literally drove right in. So they took us out one by one, slowly, took off any additional stuff we had, and then they put us in the cell. There was about 30, 35 people in my cell, a few which I still keep in touch with, actually. Another interesting point is that one of the cops was threatening me, saying that my weapon, that I am armed for G20, and I was going to cause harm because I had a metal weapon with me, which was my transfer punch. So the best answer to tell him was, you know what, with this, the best I could do is give you a free ride.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, okay, so this is why your story is very unique, because you're the only person that I've heard of. I've heard of a lot of people that were arrested, you know, detained illegally or with no reason given or for no reason at all. But you're detained on your way to work in uniform. And this is why, you know, this is something that's a bit strange, because I know that the police officers, with a lot of them, that are in uniform, you know, they had to go through, I guess, you know, there was a lot of protesters yelling at them and stuff. I saw that for sure. And so I know that, like, it just seems like the general public has this, certain people in the public have an attitude towards, like, people in uniform. You know, maybe even just going beyond the G20, like, as your work as a TTC, have you faced, as a TTC worker, have you faced, like, or harassment from the public or anything like that?
Have I faced harassment in regards to G20 or harassment from the public?
Yeah, just in general, because that's what I'm, like, wondering, you know, is, like...
In general, every day I get into arguments over fares, over transfers, every single day.
It's almost like it's, that's why it's almost like I see it as, like, TTC workers have, like, you know, it's, they have a similar disadvantages that the police have, but they have none of the, you know, none of the perks that the police have almost. You don't have the power, right? That's the, you know, so that's the intense part. Like, and they were actually, like, making a joke of this, that you had your uniform and, like.
There was two of us, actually, and I don't know why they singled me out, but there was two of us, both in uniform. Two TTC collectors. We both knew each other. We were friends. We were walking together because he was on a break anyways. Mm-hmm. So he was going to walk me to Queens and then walk back to college because he had 3.5 hours to kill before the next piece of his shift.
Mm-hmm. So he didn't... He got arrested too, or he...
He got off scot-free. They nailed me left, right, left, center, hard, right to the ground. And he kept on walking.
Whoa. Now, this... I guess... Okay, what's gone on since this has happened? Like, it's been a few months now. Have you been, like, I know from reading a recent article, and you can check this out on the Toronto Media Co-op, Toronto Transit Commission worker arrested for going to work, by Elroy Yao. It's a letter that you wrote, and it's been posted on the Toronto Media Co-op. And you've been off work since?
I've been off work since the day it happened. I was released on the 28th. Which was the Monday, and ever since I was on vacation that week, so it didn't affect anything, but I didn't go to work after that. So basically, my last day of work was the 26th. The 28th. At first, it didn't seem to affect me. A week or two down the road, suddenly I'm in the subway and I'm crying. I can't figure out why. And I'm having a flashback of events. I'm yelling. I'm screaming. I'm like talking to a person I was in the cell, in one of the cells with, because I was moved from cell to cell. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't there. I was just talking to him. Oh. So people thought I was absolutely nuts. So that's when I went to see a medical doctor, and he told me, oh, you have post-traumatic syndrome. And he put me on medication at first. He put me on something called clonazepam. It's an anti-anxiety medication. 1 milligram times 3 a day. It was like taking a Tic Tac. It did nothing for me.
Whoa.
So from 3 milligrams a day till today, today I'm sitting between, depending on the day, 12 to 16 milligrams. 30 milligrams, I'd be in a padded room, mm-hmm. in a jacket where I can't move. After, I think my second or third, I can't remember, the doctor was aware of my dosage and said, up your dosage and take this much as you need, but do not exceed this amount no matter what, which was 22 milligrams. He goes, just stay below 20. He prescribed me Ativan, which is another anti-anxiety medication, which you take 1 milligram. As needed, to a maximum of 3 milligrams. I take both medications, and Ativan, I take 6 to 8. I cannot take the subway because of the screeching noises, because one of the most stressful factors of the whole event was the noise. And the subway on the track makes the same noise as the riding in the cages, the opening and closing of the cages.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many things set off flashbacks, and you just never know when it happens. And certain stations, I know, I mean, I've been with TTC for a while, like I'll get off at a certain station, take an Ativan, relax for 5 minutes, then take it to where I want to go. I don't even go near Queen's Park. I get off the stop before I get off the stop before, and I walk along Bloor to Yonge, mm-hmm. and then take it down to College, because I live in the College Park area.
Yeah.
I kind of remember the last time I walked down Queens, down Yonge, between College and, I'd say University Avenue.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely where it was happening. Well, it was the whole, you know, the intense part with having this post-traumatic stress is that, you know, how much of the Toronto was taken up by this G20, you know, it was all around the downtown core. There was different, you know, G20 scenes that happened. Well, and I can understand, like, why you're having this stress now, because of how, like, you know, spending 35 hours in jail is... Seems like a lot, especially if they're not giving you any reason for it, or didn't you give you any charge or anything. Was this all? Did you spend it all in the Eastern Avenue Detention Center?
I spent it between 5 cells, all at Eastern Avenue. It wasn't just the one. I thought it was just the one facility where our bus pulled in, the TPS bus pulled in, and people were getting released. I thought they were getting released. The next day, I saw them. It's just a huge detention center. And I was taken to a booking sergeant. He's looking at my hot sheet, which is, I guess, technically my arrest sheet. And he's like, the answer was like, I think you were just wrong place, wrong time, buddy. And I told him, listen, I got 2 dogs at home that haven't been walked and haven't been fed. Like, I need to make a phone call. I need to make arrangements for someone to pick up my dogs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And were you ever able to make a phone call? I know that when they had the media tour, they had this whole wall of, like, payphones that looked like that. It looked like one room. Were you able to...
From what I heard from everybody that walked by, phones don't work worth shit.
Oh.
They didn't work. So your other option was to see duty counsel. And duty counsel basically just took a few notes. He told me stuff. Like, he told me outright... I don't know why you're not released. You should have been released at you should have been released at 11. This is Sunday now. You should have been released by 11, he goes. They're keeping you here for a reason. He goes, you may want to start thinking about friends. who can pay post bail, post bond. He was explaining this procedure to me. I've never been in trouble with the police. Mm-hmm. I've never had a speeding ticket. Parking ticket I had too. But I've never been in trouble with the police, and I've always cooperated with the police.
Okay, how about the TTC? Since we've been talking about the TTC, the situation, I know when I was following the protest on the Saturday, and I was covering it, I was filming it, and then I remember trying to get home on Saturday evening, and the whole TTC was closed down. And then, so what? When you were going to work, was it like? Were you being warned that the TTC was there anything going on the Sunday in terms of closing, or was
in terms of closing at 2:30? I saw what was happening and I heard on the radio that the TTC was closed. My shift doesn't start till 6 p.m. till 2:25 or 2:35 a.m.
Right.
So I had lots of time. 4:30 p.m. I went to College Park, just downstairs from my place, and I called control, transit control, and asked them, like, "Hey, here's my options. There's no train. Do you want me to go to Queen's Park, grab my cash, and walk up to St. George?" Their answer was pretty much, "Are you nuts? You're going to walk a briefcase with a lot of money." "No, just stay there, call your division, check in, make sure they know you're there, and make sure they get main covered off until you get there." And that's what I did. And when I received the phone call saying they're at around probably 6:45, seeing that there would be a deadhead train waiting for me at Queen's Park, because we had one deadhead train that was shuttling police and transit police and supervisors in the U part from Bloor to St. George, they said it'll hold for me and take me to St. George. And it was full service from Kipling to Kennedy, so I could have got to Main Station no problem on a regular train.
Right. So that, okay, so when you're in this situation, you're locked up for all this weekend for the G20 weekend. I guess the shocking thing is that if you had these TTC supervisors out trying to get your situation resolved or trying to get you out, like that it couldn't happen. I guess were there any attempts on the outside? Were people trying to get you out? Did you find out?
Yes,
later,
there was actually. I was the union sent down. Their lawyers, the lawyers were not permitted at Eastern Avenue. They were not permitted entry. My union steward came down twice, once for an hour, once for three, to find out, am I in there? What's his condition? How can we get him out? Here's his schedule. He went to the division to get my schedule. He was supposed to be there. They ignored him and said, "Sorry, get lost, buddy," more or less. It was very, very arrogance. So he thought, you know what? I'm going to come back in uniform. So the second time he came back, John came back, he came back in full TTC uniform. And the police were a lot more polite to him, but told him, different police officers, told him, "Sorry, we can't let you in right now. I'm going to have to ask you to leave."
Well, now, when you're eventually let out, like, how did that process happen? Did they just decide, or like, was there any, like, how did you just get let out then eventually?
In my final cell, probably around 1 a.m. This would have been Monday morning, 1 a.m. I was already dead tired of sleep. I was a mess. I was fogged. I had no idea what was happening. Gate open. Court officers were there, and I could see their lips move, and they were talking, but I didn't understand. I couldn't hear them. I couldn't comprehend. And then he pointed at me and waved his fingers like, "Come here, come here, come here." And slowly I came through, because I was kind of napping on and off, trying to sleep on hard concrete. Like, I mean, I was freezing, and I wasn't about to take their idea. I mean, the court officer's idea is, if you want to keep warm, the best thing to do is sleep inside the porta potty. Because plastic is warmer than cement.
Oh, no.
It was already embarrassing enough in prison during the first cell with my hands behind my back. And I had to ask a guy, "Listen, can you undo my fly and hold on to my junior and help me pee?" And there were others that were too embarrassed. And they just wet themselves and made a mess in their pants. And that was all over the floor. So the next day when I saw the news and they were showing cells of G20, I actually laughed. I was like, they cleaned that place up pretty good. It looked kind of messy, but it looked like, you know, the way the police would want the public to see it. This is what it looked like. We don't want to show you the cells, the real cells, where there were injured people with blood and bruises all over the floor and urine on the floor, and guys sleeping in it, walking in it, moving it around with their feet, you know, just by walking. We'll just kind of throw a couple of those little crap bread sandwiches and a bunch of styrofoam cups around.
Well, when they're moving you around, like when you're in this holding cell area and they moved you around to a bunch of different cells, why do you think that was? Do you think it was like a psychological thing, or do you think it was because were they cleaning up the cell, or
just to be honest, they had no idea what they were doing. Just
oh no,
because I had nothing to do. I mean, except look out a cage. Mm-hmm. I saw all our stuff were put in property bags, and I watched them. And I knew it was my property bag because I recognized certain items in it. Mm-hmm. I watched her move it from one area to another area, look at her paperwork, take that exact same bag, and move it back to the same area. Within 4 minutes, roughly, a male officer took that same bag, did the exact same thing, and left it there.
Oh.
Minutes later, another, I think it was a female, I can't remember at this point, male or female court officer, took that bag and put that bag back in slot A. And that night, I was arrested Saturday night, it might have even have been Sunday or very early morning, as in 1, 2 a.m. They took the property bag and go, is this yours? Yeah. And they took a picture of me with my property bag.
So when I guess the stuff in the property bag was that like your transit punch?
That was my watch. That was my belt. That was my shoelaces. That was my anything metal or anything I could have hurt myself or someone else with. Basically, I was in the cell with a pair of shoes with no laces, a pair of pants and a TTC pants, and a TTC shirt. That was all I had on. Rings, necklaces, watch, all that was put in property bags, as well as my cell phone.
Well, with all this that's happened, is there anything going on in terms of the legal stuff? That's what I was wondering about. Like, what's
in terms of legal stuff, a lot has happened. We're not just talking psychological trauma, pain, and suffering. That's one area. Mm-hmm. Charter of Rights of Canada Freedoms was violated mm-hmm. to the extreme during that weekend.
Yep.
And that'll play a big role in, I'm sure, a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. I've spoken to many attorneys. I have quite a few retainers sitting at my desk at home, and it's just a matter of weeding through of who I trust the most. And most lawyers are doing it for less than they normally would with a normal client.
Right. So this...
Because most would take 40% right off the back. They say so.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are taking... Every single... The nine that I have are taking less. And the nine I have will all front up the cost first. All my medical reports, everything, they're like $600 that usually come out of my pocket. They'll front that all up first and take it out when it's settled.
Well, one of these mysteries, one of the conspiracies that I'm still trying to figure out in the G20 is who was really running the show. And so I'm wondering, like, when you're thinking about these lawsuits, like, would this be against Toronto Police, or would this be against the G20, or would this, like, is there a group, like, have you narrowed it down to who's at fault, or?
I actually haven't narrowed down who you would blame for martial law. Because that's exactly what it was. It was martial law. When you arrest a man going to work in a recognized city uniform with people to vouch for him, and you still arrest him, and other people just for walking down the street for no apparent reason. To me, that's martial law. So who do you sue for martial law? Who would I be suing against? I honestly, at this point, my lawyers, they're not even 100% sure. There would probably be several people that would be called in. It wouldn't just be Toronto Police.
Right. And well, that's why I'm glad that you're getting the word out. And you know, when I read your letter last week on the Media Co-op, the letter from Elroy Yao, that's when I decided that I had to try to get you on just to try to get the word out, because you know your story is so incredible, and I think you know talking about it too I think helps a bit with the recovery, or I hope it does at least. That's why I want to thank you for appearing on the show. And yeah, and I hope you get better soon. You know, I know you haven't had a great summer, but we're into fall now, so hopefully you know seasons can change things. Or
yeah,
and I think and I have heard that there's going to be an event coming up too at Ryerson next week, next Wednesday. And hopefully we're going to have some more information on that a bit later on the show too. Thanks a lot, Elroy. Or is there anything else you want to add? Or
yeah, to all those who are suffering what I'm suffering, I mean, see your family doctor. Be honest. He's there to help you. He's a professional. Get in with CAMH. There will be withdrawal symptoms if you're on anti-anxiety. And remember, like, there's not a lot of counselors out there and psychologists that are trained in this field for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Your best friends are probably your G20 friends you met in prison or you met through G20. And that's why sometimes the G20 meetings are kind of important, because you get to talk to one another and you feel what each other felt.
For real. Yeah, thanks a lot, Elroy Yao.